Okay, Lisa, we're good.
Okay, okay. So it doesn't sound like we're hearing any more beeps, so let's get started. So just a few little housekeeping things to reference. For muting, you can do *6 on your landline phone or mute if you have mute capability on your cell phone. And to unmute it, to say something or jump in, and we totally encourage you to do that, you press *7. So we ask that while we are talking back and forth, if you could keep it on mute, which is *6, so that we don't hear the background noise in the background from people's homes. And I want to start the call and thank everyone for coming. We are so excited to have the first LH1 Plus live call. Liz and myself have been working to get this up and running and to jump into a topic that is very important to all of us, hearing each other's stories. LH1 Plus is a very rare disease that we're all very aware of and is very difficult to find a lot of information about. And this group being created the way that it was, we're hoping that we can learn more information from each other and hope that tonight we can gain a greater understanding by starting to share our stories on this platform. Tonight I've asked a few people to start by sharing their experience with the LH1 Plus group, and then I thought we could carry on from there and others could join in and share their stories as well. That way we could all get to know each other better. Before we begin, I want to introduce Lissa. I think everybody knows her, but most of all you know her from LHON. Her son Jeremy was affected with LHON, and she created LHON.org. She plays a very significant role in advocating for all of us and for the LHON and LHON Plus families and patients, and puts a tremendous amount of time into everything. I just want to thank her for all the help that she does do for us. We're really excited to have the people who have offered to speak tonight. I'm going to be starting with Shelley, and then Marcy is going to speak, and then I've got a few other people that, if they're comfortable, they're going to continue to speak about what their experiences have been as well. And I want to thank them for taking their time to talk about their experience. It's always interesting to hear about somebody else's experience with the disease. This is a disease where we're not going to have exactly the same symptoms, and we're not going to have the exact same presentation, but I think we will find that we all have a bit of a similar story and history to it. The biggest goal of this phone call is just to get to know each other. We can kind of put faces and voices together. If we can do that, we can be able to reach out to people all over the world and feel a lot more comfortable and not feel so isolated. And the goal of this call is not to talk about the disease in the sense of diagnosing the medical condition. We're not doctors, but it's more here as a resource where we can be a sounding block and in that sense, trying to help to guide people in the direction of being able to be their own advocates. But just to be clear, again, I'm not a doctor. Liz is not a doctor. It's more a matter of us just trying to learn more as a group. Speak to your doctor is right. So without further ado, let's jump right in. So I'd like to introduce Shelley. I met Shelley at the UNDF conference, the first LHON conference that Lissa started. And Shelley and I felt like we were a genetic match when we met. We started sharing our story, and there were so many similarities that just from meeting that first day, we've had a connection ever since. And I think you will find she has an interesting story. So, Shelley, are you ready to talk?
Sure. Hi, everybody.
Are you there?
Okay. I'm here.
So, tell us a little bit about yourself. Tell us about how your disease began and what your quest for diagnosis looked like.
Yeah, I think like everybody with Lone Plus, it was a very difficult diagnosis, and maybe more so for me, and this is not common, so I'm not implying that, but I've had type 1 diabetes since I was 4 years old. So initially, a lot was blamed on that, but I got where, you know, graduated from college, was working as a financial advisor, and I was just collapsing in stairwells and under my desk. I was getting so weak, and I just couldn't figure it out. I mean, I wasn't a superb athlete or anything, but I used to do a lot of cross-country ski and jog and ride bike and stuff. So I knew something was drastically changing. And the synopsis of it is it took 12 years to get a diagnosis. My parents thought I was dying. My doctors thought I was dying. And I was checked for pretty awful things like Lou Gehrig's and so forth. It ended up I have myoclonic jerks. They're also called seizures, but they are not grand mal, but where the muscles jerk, and they also tense up. When I have a flare-up, they'll get, like, stiff, and I kind of walk like a robot. But my vision is affected, but not drastically. I still am pretty blessed. I think for me and my family, that was the toughest part, was not having a diagnosis for so long. And I'm talking, I was at Mayo Clinic and University of Chicago, Baylor, and ended up finally getting a diagnosis right here in Denver. I had a doctor for my retinas that just wouldn't quit. And he said, I don't like the looks of your optic nerve. And we have a guy that's just brilliant. And he said, your neuromuscular stuff going on, you know, would you be willing to see him? I'm like, of course. And anyway, that was the diagnosis. And he's a brilliant man in and of himself. He speaks at conferences to optic neurologists from all over the country. So I'm pretty blessed there. But that's kind of what I've dealt with.
Now, Shelley, you went and met with Nancy Newman, and Nancy Newman was one of the doctors who originally named LHON plus the disease, didn't she?
Yes, that's my understanding.
Yeah. Do you remember her ever talking about what LHON plus was?
Mitochondrial type of disease, and just that the symptoms vary from person to person, so it's a little bit hard to have a tight classification, but basically mitochondrial, where the cells don't function to their full capacity. That's what I recall.
So how do you cope with your disease each day? Do you find that you've had to make adjustments in your lifestyle?
Definitely. I think over time, and maybe others can share what they have experienced after, but I think I've learned certain things of how to deal with it, and certainly not right for everybody, but they actually, when I was diagnosed, I had lost so much weight that I was medically anorexic, just had no appetite either, and they put me on a low antidepressant, which helps mask pain, stimulates appetite, and so it's used for other things than, you know, mild depression or severe depression,
yeah,
whatever they have. So I think that was one help. You know, you really don't have a choice. When I get really weak, I just have to flat out sleep, get rest, and then you kind of regain your strength again. I try to eat kind of what they call grazing, you know, throughout the day, so that I'm not starving those cells. those are some of the things, trying to do a little bit of exercise without overdoing. Those are some things that have helped me. And
that
I know
makes
it's
sense.
Cliche, but
yeah.
Positive attitude. And I didn't have one in the beginning. I was like, screw this. But I think over time, you know, you kind of adjust and learn.
And I think, I know in my case, I think eventually it's an acceptance. It's an acceptance that this is going to be here and it's not going to be going away. So you need to decide how you're going to live with it.
Right. And still trying to live positively. And you know, there's days when all of my diseases hit on the same day. I'm not a real happy camper. But for the most part, I think you can still do a lot and be a productive individual. That's kind of my summary.
Thank you. Does anybody have anything that they would like to comment on or that they found that's similar to them or have any feedback?
And I'd like to ask the group, do any of you have several diseases? I want to, I'm just curious about that because I have rheumatoid arthritis, an autoimmune disease, type 1 diabetes, and my optic neurologist said he would not be a bit surprised if the same mutation caused all of them and at totally different times in my life. So that was surprising to me.
This is Jamie. Hi. I'm similar. I have systemic lupus and actually recently diagnosed with hereditary angioedema as well, which is a whole another ball of wax.
Okay.
But, so it can be taxing on certain days. But systemic lupus was my first diagnosis. And then I didn't know I actually had a mitochondrial disease until my son lost his vision his first year of life.
Oh, wow. So quite early compared to the average, right?
Yeah. And we actually didn't know because he had just adapted since he was so young until he was in second grade that there was even a problem.
Wow.
So, but he has a very, what he can see pretty clear, but it's just a very thin sliver on each of his eyes. His right eye is worse than his left. So, and my daughter's presenting with the same symptoms. You know, mitochondria-wise, more so like I did than my son. His body functions better than ours do, but he also has CFTR dysfunction. So it's similar to cystic fibrosis. That gene doesn't work right, I guess, and so he has a lot of breathing issues along with it.
Mm-hmm.
But I have a lot of the myoclonic, I can't ever say that. I know that's the wrong word probably, but the jerk.
No, you're saying it right. Okay.
And I don't know, a whole host of other things. I have dysautonomia, so I pass out and fall over and all kinds of stuff. Like, it's just a struggle. I used to be a microbiologist. Can't work anymore, so that kind of thing. But I do a lot with the kids, so.
Good for you.
Probably helps that you have that training in your background.
Actually, yeah, I thought it was laborious to begin with, and they tried to tell me it was something called dominant optic atrophy, which is similar, but it's not mitochondrial-based, and so I didn't think that's what it was because he had so many other problems. He wasn't growing, he had weak muscles, and he had the breathing issues, and so they ended up sending his stuff off to be tested at the National Eye Institute in a study because he was still young when he lost his vision. that's more of why they thought it was dumb optic atrophy. And then they found out it was indeed Leber's. My daughter started to lose some vision. They tried me on testosterone for the hereditary angioedema, and I started to lose vision, so I went off that quickly. and I didn't lose any after that. So that's our story.
And if you don't mind sharing, what mutation does your family have?
11778, is that right? G to A,
okay.
Or something?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So, and we all carry it. They did more genetic testing just to verify. We first time I heard about LHON Plus was with Dr. Huang at Cincinnati Children's. So,
oh.
So you guys are followed by a mitochondrial doctor then.
Yeah, now we are. Mm-hmm.
That's good.
We've seen Nancy
particularly.
She wanted to see William because he was so young. She thought that was an interesting case. So,
okay. Yeah, because I think particularly when you have things going on with the eyes, but then when it starts to be clusters of things going on with your body, it really helps when the mitochondrial doctors are involved because they can really help to organize all of that other stuff that goes on.
Don't you all think it's amazing they're learning a lot from our cases, even. I mean, this isn't a disease that was known, a lot was known about even just a couple decades ago.
That's right. This is Chris in Pennsylvania. My brother got LHON at the age of 18. This was, he's now 54, so this was a long time ago, and I got it at age 64, it'll be 4 years in May, Lon, and back then, they didn't know very much about the disease, and he was treated at Wills Eye Hospital in Philadelphia, and his sisters, we weren't really told much about it at all back then. And, you know, boys were going to get, the males were going to get this probably between the ages of 18 and 35, and I didn't have it very much to worry about. And here I come down with it at age 64. It was just remarkable that I came down with this. And the main neuro-ophthalmologist at Wills Eye, who has a fantastic reputation, sent me out to California to see Dr. Sadoun. And I was Dr. Sadoun's, maybe I still am, his oldest female patient he had ever seen. So, I mean, what are the odds of this happening? But,
right,
you know, I grew up just about all my life never even giving this much thought because no one even talked to me about mitochondrial disease, you know, in all those years. But now when I look back at my health history, it explains so much that was happening to me. I was a late bloomer in all of my growing years, such a late bloomer, and I had difficulties with so many things. And, yes, I'm not a doctor, but now I understand so much what was happening to me. I can just point my finger to, well, that was probably mitochondrial related. I mean, they had me come to see a top Italian doctor who was visiting at a hospital of the University of Pennsylvania. This doctor was coming into town from Italy. He was a world-renowned pediatrician to come look at me to see why I wasn't growing. And I thought, okay, I understand that now. You know, things are just falling into place for me now when I think of things now. And but I didn't know that then because I didn't know anything about mitochondrial disease. It's just amazing when I look back now. It answers a lot of questions. but absolutely. It's like, I don't know if it was you, Shelley, who said it, but, you know, it's coming to the forefront now, but it wasn't all those many years ago, that's for sure.
Right.
So I'm encouraged that, you know, the NIH and Emory University, Wills Eye Hospital, UCLA, and abroad, there's so many clinical trials out there. And thank you, listen, thank you, Lisa. Lisa, you know, you do so much work with this LHON Plus page. We need to thank you for all that.
You
give us all the latest updated information, and I'm so grateful for all of that. And Lisa, with your LHON page, you just are, you know, there aren't words in Webster, so thank you all, both of you, for all you do for us, to tell us about the latest clinical trials and all the latest research that's going on. It's really what a great support system you have provided.
It makes us feel less isolated, doesn't it?
Yes. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's a great support system you've created for us, really. I'm eternally grateful to both of you.
Chris, I came from a family situation kind of similar to yours, where my mom went probably 20 years of medical appointments where nobody would ever answer her questions, and she would go from doctor to doctor. And when I was diagnosed, I went and asked my mitochondrial doctor, is it possible if my mom has this? And I described my mom's symptoms, and she said, oh, you need to get your mom into this office. And sure enough, I brought my mom into the office, and my mom was diagnosed with it. And my mom is going through those same things where it's connecting the dots of, you know, did I have this in my childhood? Did I have this when I was, you know, having these eyes as pregnancies? And it really, you're absolutely right. It's those very recent decades where nobody was aware of it.
Yes.
What I find is that the doctors all kind of work in their own little silos, and no one is willing to connect the dots and say, yes, because of all these various symptoms, this is what you have. My neuro-ophthalmologist has said, yes, you do have Leber's Plus, but she doesn't really ask about the other symptoms unless I've brought them up.
Exactly.
You know, what I find...
We still are in an era where we have to kind of fight for ourselves.
That's right. But like you, Chris, I'm probably the oldest Canadian female. At least that's what Dr. Patel told me. Dr. Patel has since moved to California to work. But I think my own journey started actually earlier, because about, I guess, 7 years ago, my grandson was about to be born, but I was feeling awfully dizzy, and I had gone to I fainted a couple of times. I went to my GP, and she just kept saying, oh, you have vertigo. I'm going, okay,
yeah.
Well, that's kind of strange, but I was, you know, kept working away, and one day I just thought, I cannot believe how tired I am. And my daughter kind of made me go into emergency. She said, Mom, this is not you. Anyway, I ended up that I had arrhythmia. I ended up with third-degree heart block. My pulse was 24, and they said, well, it's a good thing you came in, because if you kept waiting, you would have been dead. So I ended up with a pacemaker. And what I find very interesting is that if I ask them in the pacemaker clinic, because my daughter also happens to be a medical research librarian, of course, so she's researching everything, and she said, oh, yes, there's lots of evidence to show that arrhythmias and Leber's are connected.
Yeah,
the pacemaker physicians deny it. I did see a heart specialist. He said, oh, yes, there is evidence to show that. But, you know, that happened 7 years ago. And then 3.5 years ago, or maybe 4 years, like you, Chris, when they finally came up with a diagnosis, I started to lose sight in one eye, and then 6 months later, the other eye, and they were kind of desperate, like, what is going on with this woman? And similar, well, nobody gets Libras at this age, and you're female, and you're 67, and of course, all they kept asking me was, well, what's your family history? Do you have any brothers that are blind? Unfortunately, I can't tell them that because I'm adopted, so I have no family history, no biological family background to disclose. So that was a bit of a... But they tried everything under the sun. And finally, after doing the DNA testing, et cetera, it did come back as Libras with a 778 mutation. And there's nothing they can do. My vision has gradually over these last 3.5 years gotten so that really I can't see anything. I can see a little bit of light. I can count 3 fingers at my nose. That's about it. On one eye. On the other, I can't see anything. So, and some of the other, I've seen a neurologist because I have also complained over the last few years and probably ignored previous to all of this that I would always have a left-sided weakness. And,
yes.
You know, complete left-sided weakness. And I thought, this is so strange. Am I having a stroke? And the neurologist would test me and say, no, you're not having a stroke and you don't have MS. Well, finally, when she just heard that I have Libras, she goes, oh, you have Libras plus. But,
okay.
You know, but I still suffer from these left-sided weakness, which comes and goes in waves. It'll be fine for several weeks, and then other times I'm thinking, ooh, am I going to have a stroke now? But so far, so good. But, yes, it's to get the physicians to all agree that there is such a thing.
Yeah.
They like to kind of push it off, I find. But it's probably because of the lack of knowledge.
Well, for 30 years, I've been saying, if I said this once, I said it 100 times. I finish an appointment and I'd say, okay, I'd like to put my rheumatologist, my neurologist, this sounds pathetic, girl, like who's ever listening, but I'd like to put my rheumatologist, my cardiologist, my neurologist, I'd like to put all these doctors in a room together for just half an hour works. Just put them all together for a short time, and I think we'd resolve some issues if I could just get them all together for a short time.
Exactly. I agree.
Mm-hmm. But it'll never happen.
No.
Yeah.
Because it would be so helpful if they could just listen to each other for a short time.
That's right. Could even just.
And I know we have more people we want to hear from.
Yes.
But sometime during this, I'd like to hear anybody else's family. My mom in particular, she's not very accepting of the situation. And my grandmother, who's passed away long before I even knew what LHON was blind. So I'm just curious if anybody else in the group has encountered that type of situation where they're the only ones in their family that affected.
Are you asking, like, are you the only one that was affected in your family?
Yeah, if anybody else that's on this conference call has that situation.
So far, I know I'm the only one since I've been 8 years old that has been affected that I know of that recently has been diagnosed, but I have a niece and a great niece that are losing their eyesight, but we don't know if it's from Libras, but they're fixing to be tested since I just found out about it, about Libras Plus. And I have a mother and a sister that died but we don't know if that's what they died from. They had several different complications. But I've been hearing a lot of y'all talk about the right eye, y'all losing y'all eyesight in y'all right eye, and that's common. I wonder if it's common in a lot of Libras plus patients about
my left. It's some of both, but primarily my left eye. I don't know if anybody else.
I was just curious because that's where I lost mine in my right eye when I was younger, and now I've lost in my left eye.
Lissa might be able to weigh in on that a little bit more because she hears from a lot of families, but I would suspect that it's probably in both.
In both?
I've definitely heard it more in both, but I'm sorry, is it Joe that's asking the question?
Yes.
And Joe, I'm sorry, are you saying that you're affected in one eye, not the other?
No, I'm affected in both, but it started in my right eye, and that's what I was wondering if it started in most people's right eye, but it affected both.
Honestly, I have not heard that it usually starts in one or the other. Some people, it seems to start in the right, some people start in the left, and eventually it seems to affect both. I was curious, do you happen to know which mutation your family carries?
No, not yet. I do not. I do know I am a carrier, but they are still in the process of seeing what carrier I am.
But if they know you're a carrier, then do they know clinically because it looks like you have it, or do they know you're a carrier because some sort of genetic testing was done?
Yes, ma'am. The DNA genetic gene testing was done. And it come back as the Leber's hereditary optic neuropathy plus come back, but not the, they didn't test for the specific.
They probably, and I shouldn't jump in because maybe I'm saying it incorrectly, but they probably have the mutation and just didn't pass that number on because they should have it. It's just where in the DNA the mutation exists.
Mm-hmm.
11778 is the most common. 14484 next, 3460. Those are the big three. So yeah, it's kind of like mutually exclusive. In other words, if they did a DNA test,
yeah, they did.
And if the test confirmed you have LHON, plus or otherwise, because there's really no different test for plus or otherwise, all they're testing for is the LHON mutation. So if it came back saying you have LHON, then as was being said, the report really should have the mutation number on it. It's not a two-step process, so if you can get your hands on the report, you should be able to find the mutation on it. That's the way it works.
Okay. How do I go about getting my hands on that test?
Well, the question would be the doctor that did the, I don't know, was it a neuro-ophthalmologist or an ophthalmologist? Was it someone you saw recently or a long time ago? I mean, who did the testing?
Oh, no, I just had it done a week and a half ago.
Oh, just asked for a copy of the results.
It's just been done here recently.
Or you should be able to call the office of the doctor who ordered the test for you. And are you saying, did they call you and tell you the result?
They brought me in their office and they just told me that I had LHON plus.
Okay. So you should be able to call the office and say to them, you know, please tell me I've learned a little bit more and now I want to know which mutation number I have.
Uh-huh.
And the one they give you should be one of the three that we've been talking about, 11778, 1444, and 3460. And it's not going to change your life knowing which one it is, but I guess it might in the sense that you said you have two other relatives that are starting to lose sight now. How old are your relatives that are losing sight?
One of my nieces, she is in her 30s, but she's been having problems ever since she's been like 11. She's they diagnosed her with all kinds of stuff. And then my other little niece, she's been having problems ever since, you know, she's been like 7 or 8. It's all started with when they're like 8 years old. It all starts with all of them, like it did with me.
Okay.
I mean, they all start up about the same age in the family, and I don't know if that's normal.
It's not necessarily normal. No, it's not. And I mean, honestly, it's, if I had to put money on it, I'd guess it's 34-60, only because if you have 3 women in a family affected and affected at a young age, 34-60 is the most pathogenic of the mutations, and it would be the most likely one to affect, you know, several women in a family, but it could be 11778, it could be 1444. And at the end of the day, knowing the mutation is not going to change your life. If you, the only thing would be that, you know, if you knew that you had 11778, it is recruiting for clinical trials for people that are recently affected with vision loss if they're 18 and over, and those things don't apply. So it's interesting to know,
but who knows,
you know, it's not a rush. Pardon me?
But future studies may, so it would be helpful to know.
I
just know there's so many things that I have that mimics MS, and I've been tested for so many things.
Yes.
They keep on telling me that's not what it is. That's not what it is. And then I go to my doctor and he says, look, we're going to do a DNA and this is, and then I go and he said, this is what you have. And I'm like, after all these years, from 8 years old to now, y'all finally find out what it is. I mean,
I just want to give you a hug.
So it's just like, it's almost been 40 years and I'm kind of like, you know, it's shocking.
A lot of process. Yeah.
You know, after all these years to find out, you know, I've never heard of it ever in my life. So
I don't think any of us had really heard of it before either.
Yeah. So
and
it
wasn't
a shock.
It kind of a relief to get a diagnosis? I was actually relieved because
I was very, very, very relieved to get a diagnosis because I've been to so many doctors and been in the hospital so much with so many different complications. It was kind of a relief, but a kind of bittersweet.
Right.
So.
Yeah, exactly.
That would be a really good way to describe it.
Yeah.
Yeah. When I was diagnosed with Shannon, when I was diagnosed, I went back up to, as actually my nephew was diagnosed first, and so my sister said that the geneticist in Chapel Hill wanted all of us to come in and be tested, and I was in North Carolina. So we went in, when I went at that time, I was using a walker, and just interesting from that, now I mean, I can walk without it and stuff, you know, it just, the way it waxes and wanes is how Muge kind of explained it. The other thing is, she's like, and don't feel guilty if your sons go blind, because I have 2 boys. I'm like, what? You know, it was like, I was like in shell shock. What are my kids? What's going to happen to my boys? What are you talking about? You know, because I had like no idea what was going on, you know, and I've been pretty much sick, you know, from the beginning, you know, like, and so is my youngest son. Like, he had, you know, he was on an apnea machine. He has, like, weird skin issues. And I've, you know, they've been to, like, neurologists and testing. And, you know, and they ended up with, like, the emotional stuff, like, in the Asperger's spectrum and ADHD, you know, Tourette stuff. And it's like, where did all this come from? You know? And when you start looking at all of the, you know, the more research, it makes more sense. But both my kids are like, oh, we don't have that. You're a mutant mom. You're just like an X-Men. So, I mean, I kind of get into like a comic book thing. So it makes it a little easier. I mean, they're 27 and 25. So I'm just like, and I'm worried about them. But,
yeah.
You know, so. And then in trying to say, oh, this isn't going to happen, you know, like, it's not going to affect me, they just don't realize. But, like, my whole family, you know, on my mom's side, obviously, is affected. My mother was diagnosed with Harding's disease, which is, you know, having the MS and Lido, plus, and then my sister, she and I both have 100%, and then my other sister is 62% mutated in complex 1, and we're the 117788. That's right. Trying to, and I'm like, my vision, like last time I had my vision checked, the doctor said I had a freckle in the back of my optic nerve. I'm like, you, a freckle? What are you talking about? Like, but when I went into this, the clinical trial, it was interesting because, like, on the eye, I don't know if anybody else has, but on the eye chart, but I was missing, like, just a whole block, like a center of the block that I didn't see. And I didn't even know that I couldn't see. You know, it's just my eye was sore. But I have, like, ataxia, you know, where I have tremors all the time. And then I have ptosis for one eye, like, kind of, like, hanging down. And so there's all these different, you know, little things that never added up, you know. Or, and then you get things like, you're malingering, you're making this up. I wish I was. Like, I wish I could just make this up. You know, it's like a nightmare story, like, honestly, at times. But then if you get enough rest and, you know, enough of the supplements and stuff, I feel almost normal, you know, not tired. But, yes.
So. Now, Shannon, you see one of the mitochondrial doctors in, is it Boston?
Yeah, I see one at MGH. I see Emil Cara at Mass General. And then I have an appointment in Cleveland just to go, like, even deeper into, like, the Libris Plus. And that was with and Dr. Wang. That was right. But I spoke to him, like, a year. No, it wasn't even a year ago, about 6 months ago, and kind of explained what was going on. And he's like, you don't have just Elhan. You have Libris Plus. And I'm like, what? Like, and at that time, it's just like, yeah, you know, like a light went on. And I don't remember who just said this, you know, getting diagnosed, it was like, oh, well, at least I'm not making this up anymore. You know, it did make sense, but then it was like, whoa, you know, it was a lot, you know. But, yeah, Mel Carr is, I mean, she's great. I do see her about every 6 months. And so it's actually, a, you know, I have to go into the pediatrics area, but that's all right. And she does a lot of research. Yeah, and she does adults, too, yeah. And she does, I think she's got, like, 3 clinical trials going on right now. So if anybody wants to come to Boston, I do fly you in, too. That's, I don't know, like, they just flew my sister from Minnesota. She just came in and is applying for a different, not the MTP-31, but it's a different, it's not even the same drug. It's a different drug. And this will be in capsule form, which is an infusion.
Okay. Okay. What is that?
No, she is looking. Yeah, she is looking for people for that right now. Like,
Oh, is she?
Yeah, so she does need people for that to come in, and it's a long trial, but mostly you do it at home. Like, you come in, you meet with her, so they fly you in. You'll be here for like 2 days, and then like you come back, and they give you the pill. You know, a bottle of, I don't know what's in the pill, the drug. You know, and you just keep a daily diary and. You know, how it affects you. And it's safe. I mean, this, not to bring this up, but, you know, they give you, like, a clinic card, and once you complete it, you get paid, like, $1,200 just to do the thing, just to do the test.
Maybe I can get the information from you after, and I can post it on the group for everybody in case people are looking for another clinical trial.
Yeah, because, I mean, this is, I don't know, and this isn't from Stealth. I don't remember who even the manufacturer is, because I know, Lisa, you and I did the other clinical trial, and it's interesting because I followed that a little bit more. My dad has what's called Fuchs disease, and, of course, it's another eye thing. I am seeing a neuro-ophthalmologist next week, because I can't really read anymore. I've had where my vision's gone completely out, and then, you know, I really get the supplements and stuff going, and you know, the big thing for me is I can't have anything like synthetic. You know, no, it has to be, you know, the corn syrup. I can't drink corn syrup, like, you know, in sodas, it has to be real sugar. And so once I started getting rid of all those things, I did start feeling better. I don't know if anybody's ever, you know, gone through some of that. But it was, you know, the synthetics seemed to react to all the, you know, synthetic drugs, synthetic everything. So if it's, you know, a natural product, I don't. It doesn't have to be organic or whatever, but the more natural, you know, the less chemicals, the less I get. I don't get sick because I have a pseudo obstruction in my stomach. So it just doesn't contract.
Shannon, let's listen to San Diego. You mentioned that you're going to see a neuro-ophthalmologist. Is there one in particular that Dr. Kara aligns with? May I ask who you're going to see?
No, she just, they have the Mass Eye and Ear Clinic, who does they kind of work together. So, you know, Mass General kind of works with Mass Eye and Ear. So it works out. They are doing MPT3 for, like, Fuchs disease. They're actually putting that, and it's bringing their vision back. So it's kind of interesting that that drug works on two different mutations.
And
so,
is there one particular doctor at Mass Eye and Ear she has you seeing, or just whoever's available?
No, I'm seeing, I have to go down and get her name. No, this is, she's also a specialist. When I was in Chapel Hill, I just saw, like, a general person, but this is a certain group that's all neuro-ophthalmologists, and I can give that information to Lisa, the name of them. But
okay,
they have like two different they have two different offices, and then, you know, they do communicate back and forth.
Okay, that'd be good.
The Korean trial that you're participating in, is that for your eyes or for your other symptoms?
That was for the that was more for the other symptoms. It was, I'm trying to remember all this stuff. It was, I don't know, Lisa, if you remember it.
Yeah.
It was, like a 6-minute walk, the torture on the bike. How did you go? I can't remember, like, the things that they had. It was more, you know, instability.
It was a trial, Ida from, Stealth Pharmaceuticals. So it was for, the drug was Vendavia. And the way that people qualify for the drug is they have to have a diagnosis of mitochondrial myopathy. And I think realistically, I think a large number of the people in the group would probably qualify for that clinically, because to have mitochondrial myopathy, you need to have exercise intolerance. You need to have, you need to have fatigue, walking to the end of the block, problems walking up and down your stairs a lot of the time, get really worn out quickly, that sort of thing. And you need to have a neurologist who sort of does an assessment and agrees that your muscles don't really work quite the same as they should. Then the other piece that they look at is they need a confirmed mitochondrial mutation, which that's the part that works really quite well for this group. For any clinical trials, is a lot of mitochondrial mutations, it's really hard for them to have really good historical data on what that genetic mutation does, but because of LHON and all the work that Dr. Sadoun and Dr. Crowley have done, there's lots of research. So our genetic mutations are very easy for researchers to look at and feel comfortable with saying yes or no on, as opposed to more rare ones in the mitochondrial community. So basically, usually what they do is they ask for your genetic information and they ask for a bit of your medical information, and then they will they'll screen you, and then they'll fly you down to do an assessment. And once they do the assessment, then they'll accept you into the trial. The trial that both myself and Shannon was involved in was basically they did the assessment of us, and the assessment involved like a medical assessment, and I think it was a cardiac, we had to do an echocardiogram, blood work, a walking study. That was the 6-minute walk study that Shannon was talking about. And then the next day we were given an IV, and you didn't know whether you're getting placebo or the drug. And the I think for both myself and Shannon, we both had a really nice experience from it. So, you know, I certainly would be going back and participating in clinical trials again after my experience.
And Lisa, I think I told you this, that they're having just going to be like the next phase. So it's just getting ready to, be on, FDA approved. So there's going to be one more phase of that. And Dr. Kara, when I just saw her, she said that actually you and I would probably both qualify for that. The other, when I mentioned we don't qualify because we were on because we did the other trial, we don't qualify for this. The one mentioning the at-home trial, we wouldn't qualify. You would. But, I felt like Wonder Woman. I got to tell everybody that because that's the only way I can explain it. Like, I've never felt that great in my entire life. I could breathe. It wasn't like trying to breathe, walking up and down stairs. I mean, I walked up in Boston. There's like a big hill in front of the State House. Walked there. I was walking everywhere. I wasn't falling over. Wasn't clumsy. I could see. My eyes were wide open. Completely different than like a regular day. and it lasted. The half-life on this, it took probably 4 days. And then, I started noticing, it's like, no, I want more of that, please. I guess I would be, at this point, drug-seeking for it, or just going back to it. I never, ever felt like... So like, good. This is how regular people feel. Like, this is how you feel. Like normal people feel like this. I've never ever felt like that. And I was like, I swam. I used to work out, probably 6 hours a day. And, I've never felt like that before. It was just, it felt great. No pain anywhere in my whole body, and I've been diagnosed with like anything you want to call it, you have fibromyalgia, you got this, you got that, share another spinal tap, but I'd rather just have an injection. I told Lisa, when I talked to her, it was that great of experience. But then once it was gone, now I'm like, oh, that's not
you're
fair.
Back
you know,
back
yeah, I'm back to normal. I'm like, give me that back, So that's the only kind of,
downfall,
Yeah, because you get to feel like that's what it's like. Other people, the typical people feel like, being atypical, it's kind of, it's frustrating, I guess. That's where I get, this extra frustration. Because I know the medicine's right there. It's right there. We're about to get it, so... that's a positive, it's really positive for everybody. So, I think the research is so important now because before it couldn't do anything. Just take some more CoQ10, you'll be fine. And
very exciting.
I get excited about it. I'm sorry, it totally was like, I just felt so great. Like, I've never, ever have I felt that good. So,
yeah.
Is there anybody else still on the call? We've been going an hour that would like to speak.
Marcy, are you there?
Yeah, I'm still here. Can you hear me?
Did you want to tell us a little bit about your experience?
My actual LLHON story kind of follows more of their typical LHON pattern, but of course I don't fit quite in the box. I do have family history of it. Both my great uncles are affected, and one of my aunts is affected. And my mom is one of 6 girls, so we have a lot of carriers, unfortunately. So I first lost sight in my left eye when I was 19 and saw a neuro-ophthalmologist. I live in South Carolina. Most of my doctors are in Charlotte. We're just south of Charlotte, North Carolina. So I saw an ophthalmologist, and he ordered MRIs, and they did the steroids just in case. And then there was possible lesions on my MRI, so then I was referred to a neurologist. He specialized in MS. Well, he's the one that ordered the DNA test, and he's like, well, with family history especially. So, of course, it came back positive, and he's like, well, I'm sorry, but this is your diagnosis. And I was stable, but in 2000, I'm 35 now, and like I said, it started when I was 19. And when I was 27, I started having other symptoms, numbness and tingling in my legs, and saw my family doctor. He referred me back to the same neurologist, and he's like, I already diagnosed you. I'm like, well, something else is going on. So they did MRIs again and the spinal tap, and I did get a diagnosis of MS at that time. But all along, I had only lost vision in one eye. I did not lose vision in my right eye until I was 29 after I gave birth to my son, which, you know, they say sometimes hormone changes and all that could trigger it, but it was atypical to stay stable, just one eye affected for 10 years, because my neuro-ophthalmologist even had thought, you know, well, you stayed stable this long, chances are you will. But after I gave birth to my son, I did have an MS relapse, and there's, you know, connection between MS and LHON somehow, and that triggered my eyesight to get worse. And I did, at that time, go see Dr. Bhatti at Duke, and he's like, yes, unfortunately, it is the labors. There's nothing, you know, you can do, and, you know, your MS is stable at this time. But the past 2 years, my MS has progressively gotten worse. I was on Avonex, which is one of the first traditional disease-modifying medications. I was on that for 2 years, and then I was on Gilenya, which is the first oral pill that was approved, for 4 years, and I was stable on that. But up until 2 years ago, my MRI showed significant more lesions, and the lesions I had gotten larger. So now I am on Tysabri, which is the monthly infusion. But the thing with that one is it does have the risk of getting a brain infection called PML. If you've seen the commercials on the medicine Tecfidera that's commonly on TV, they talk about that on that one. But if you are JC virus positive, you're a higher chance of getting it. And I am JC virus positive, so it's only considered safe to be on Tysabri for 2 years, and I am in my second year. Mm-hmm. So they want to take me off of that this year, but there's not another medication yet. There is one called Lamtrada, but that's kind of considered a last resort. And there's another one called Rituxan, which isn't approved for insurance yet for MS. So, well, we're hoping another one will get approved by the end of your second year. So,
right.
So that's how I am LHON plus, because I am legally blind, and I do have MS with MS symptoms. I do have weakness and tingling in the legs, extreme fatigue. I get the tightness band around my abdomen when I'm kind of having a flare-up of symptoms, which is commonly called the MS hug. But the way I cope is I still try to do whatever I can do. I still work full time.
Wow.
Yeah. Me and my husband, we typically work opposite shifts so we can provide for transportation. And I do have a 5-year-old son that keeps me busy. And along with someone else mentioned, he also, he has been diagnosed with autism and ADHD and has sensory issues, which they said, you know, common with the mitochondrial. So there's a lot of different kinds of connections. Like you said, it'd just be wonderful if there was doctors who connected all that together. Because just 2 months ago, I was actually referred to yet another neurologist because I was considered a headache specialist because I get frequent headaches and migraines. Mm-hmm. And she, of course, you know, when you see a new doctor, oh, so interesting, blah, 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 blah. And, you know, she's looking everything up on the computer and trying to say, well, maybe you don't have this. You really have that. I'm like, I got enough diagnoses already. But like you said, it's good that they are looking into it now. So that's.
We might have a long way to go. This is Shelley again. We might have a long way to go, but the word is at least starting to get out there.
Yeah, it's just the progress that since I was first diagnosed, like I said, when I was 19 years old, and just the progress that was made since then is amazing.
Good.
That's good to hear.
Yeah.
That's very good to hear.
And like I said, I did drop my work hours. I do work 30 hours a week now as opposed to 40. But, I mean, I will say it is hard. And then it's like you have the days where, because when Lisa had messaged me right before the call, I was like, yeah, I've been having one of those off weeks the past few weeks too. Because I've actually had a flare-up of MS symptoms. And they're like, people at work are like, well, what's wrong with you? I'm like, don't you get it? Because, you know, you get the, well, you look just fine. Because sometimes don't even know that I'm legally blind unless I point it out. I'm like, don't you ever wonder why I have a huge magnifier on my desk? So it's just the, well, you look fine. And then I'm like, well, I'm not feeling well. And then, like, my sisters, they pick on me because I'm always tired when I get home, always tired. And she's like, oh, you can't call Marcy this time of day. She's normally taking a nap. I'm like, but I'm tired for a legitimate reason. So, yeah, but I
just like that. That was another thing I was going to ask the group. I made it for an evening because the other LHUN group does it in the evenings, but is an earlier time of the day easier for people? Because of that?
This is all right for me. I'm on the East Coast.
Okay.
This time works better for me because, like I said, I have a 5-year-old son.
Okay.
So.
Okay. It was in the back of my head when I was trying to plan it. I was thinking, oh, dear. I know how I am some nights.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, but yeah, well, like I said, with a young child, like I don't have my time until after he goes to bed.
Yeah, exactly.
But with the other symptoms, the doc, like I said, one of my aunts, she's also affected. She was just recently, she lost her eyesight same age, but traditional pattern, one eye then the next within months. But she actually was just recently diagnosed with MS just 2 years ago.
Hmm.
So I was even diagnosed
How
with
old is
MS.
She
is in her, she's 48.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And
well,
she lost her sight when she was 23. But she was just diagnosed with MS just 2 years ago.
Well, from this is Chris. From what I've read, there is a higher rate, if you will. Lisa, you can Lisa, you might be able to correct me because I think you posted an article about this. It's not unheard of to have Libras and MS. There's a higher statistic there. It's not unlikely to have both these diseases.
Mm-hmm.
Is that correct,
yeah.
Lisa?
This is Shannon again. That's my mom, actually, they don't know if with the MS. I mean, she has some lesions on her brain, but the other part is that, you know, they found it, and it was called Harding's disease when you have both of them. They so it has a whole another name. So if you're looking on the internet, it might be something to look into. But, you know, like, I have, you know, both, well, my sister and I have all the MS symptoms and never, you know, tested. It's not really a positive test for MS, according to a couple of the doctors that I've seen. You know, I have, I don't know if that's true or not, but, you know, at this point, I don't believe, oh, my, I went to one doctor, you know, to get a new PCP, and they told me that there's no such thing as a, you know, mitochondrial disease. I was like, okay, I don't think we're going to work out. I mean, it's,
and
that's the hard part.
And this is, Lisa, to answer your question, I think that the doctors and the literature would suggest that there is not a consensus around the answer to the question of whether LH1 and MS are, like, overlapping. I've read where it is said in one hand, oh, you know, there's a very high incidence of them happening together. And then I've read where they're not any more than statistically relevant with normal. So I don't think there's a clear consensus around it. I think that people in this group, and I think there's a lot of people who would say there's a more than the usual, but the literature is still sort of unclear on that. I think Dr. Shergott in Pennsylvania, I think, is exploring it. I think Dr. Uiman is exploring it. I think there's another woman, Jacqueline Pallant, has written articles about it. But I don't know that there's a clear consensus on the overlap. There's articles that seem to go both ways.
Yeah,
and
I've read
maybe
things.
Maybe that's something
that
Lisa wants
I've read
to get
things,
closure on.
Yeah,
get people to focus on
I've read things that say both. They've contradicted each other. At least what I've seen. But I think Dr. Uy Man had done an article on it that he presented when he did his presentation on LH1 Plus. So I'll just see if I can maybe get the reference that he referenced and post that at least. But just like Lisa had mentioned, I've seen articles that say both. Like they... One article, I think, said that patients that have MS, they have seen more of an incidence of LHON, but I haven't seen it where they're connecting the dots between.
Okay. Well, Dr. Shergott from Will's Eye did tell me that Harding's disease is definitely mitochondria-related. He did tell me that. He said Dr. Harding, he was telling about Dr. Harding, and he said he discovered this disease, he said, which is definitely mitochondrial, he said, and we see Harding's disease with people with LHON.
Yeah, I have
right.
heard that before
and,
also.
And I think in terms of nomenclature, there's a Dr. Anita Harding, and I think she's out of the UK, and I don't think she's alive today, but I think... That's
right.
A lot of diseases have certain names. And so, yeah, I think Dr. Anita Harding described the crossover of LHON and MS. So I think some people use the term Harding's disease. Some
mm-hmm.
people say, I think Dr. Uiman tends to use the terminology LHON hyphen MS. And then there's a very broad term of LHON plus, which is more, I think, LHON plus any other symptoms that aren't vision related that people have that are mitochondrial in nature. So it
the reason why I got
thing.
The actual diagnosis of MS and LHON is because of the spinal tap, because they said that, you know, there are cases of LHON that does show lesions on the brain and some other diseases also. Like I said, even the most recent neurologist I saw, she was starting to name other disorders. But my spinal tap with the oncological bands, that came back positive for MS. So they didn't just diagnose it. They saw the symptoms and the lesions. They did the spinal tap also. I think that's what they try to make sure to do when there's other factors is to get all three of them, because I think technically you only need two for the diagnosis, but that's why I do have the official MS diagnosis.
Very good. So, and
sense.
I think that's part of where you're going to get the, some people will call that Hardy's disease, some will call it LHON hyphen MS, and they're describing the same thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay, that's helpful.
Mm-hmm. Has anyone ever, like, even before I got LHON and my mitochondrial dysfunction, many, many years ago, I was diagnosed with, you know, suffered the symptoms of fibromyalgia and migraine headaches.
Yes.
Yeah, I get frequent
migraines all the time.
Yeah. I just saw that headache specialist, she actually, which is a question to ask all of you, she's recommending Botox for the migraines. Have any of you tried that?
Yes, I did once. It was so helpful. But the insurance was an issue, and Medicare does not cover Botox, but Botox was a lifesaver.
Yeah.
It really worked.
I rely on it. I end up, because I'm in Canada, luckily it's covered differently, but I rely on it. I get it once every 12 weeks, and it really does help to reduce the frequency. My neurologist sort of described that sometimes with the Botox and migraines, it takes a couple of times before the severity of the migraines start to decrease, just because he said it just seems like it just needs to balance out a little bit. But I've been doing it now for about 5 years, and it certainly helps.
That's good.
And I also use it for, they also do it, I get dystonia, so I get a lot of really bad muscle spasms. So they do it in the areas like around my neck where I get the really severe muscle spasms, which also cause the headache.
I also get trigger point injections. Has anyone tried that?
No.
From my neurologist.
No.
Because if you press on certain spots, for fibromyalgia, you have trigger points in your where your muscles are having spasms. So I get injections at the trigger points in my head and across my shoulders, and that's very helpful times too. Also.
I know we've lost a lot of people, but Lisa and Lisa have asked me to help a little bit facilitate this, and this is Shelley, but I'm diabetic and I've got to test my blood. So thank you all, and hopefully we'll do this again.
Thanks, Shelley.
Thanks, Shelley. Mm-hmm. But good night.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Well, there's one other thing. This is Chris again. I'm sorry. There's one other thing I have to ask everybody before we hang up here. Cold intolerance. Is that a problem for anybody?
Everybody's bailing out.
Well, I hate cold.
Oh, I know. Like, I can't handle it, like, wet cold at all. Or heat. Like, if it's too hot, like, North Carolina, they have, like, a heat index, and it'd be, like, 120 degrees, and I would be, like, ugh, there's just too much, like, I, you know, like, almost pass out.
Yeah, this is Marcy. Same way, me, it's heat intolerance. Again, yeah, I live in South Carolina, so that's a big problem here. But, yeah, that's also a symptom of MS, because it, heat intolerance brings on MS symptoms.
Well, Dr. Serga has told me often to avoid heat intolerance and cold intolerance.
Yeah.
That's something to be very careful about. But my body temperature is between 95 and 97. Mm-hmm. I don't know if, and you know, I've been checked for hypothyroidism so often, but no, it's the cold. Like, I walk around the house with a coat on. It's just that, you know, my body temperature is 95.5. Does anyone else have that?
Chris, my family's like that.
Yeah, I have that too. Low temperature, and that's on a consistent basis. Like, it every time my temperature gets taken, I have, you know, at home nurses that come here, and it'll be like 96, 94, and she's like, oh my goodness. And should I drink something warm? You know, I don't even know how to get warm anymore a lot of times.
I have a question. Does anybody have neuropathy in any of their limbs? Like a neuropathy, we can't feel your toes or your
hands. Oh, cold hands, cold feet, tingling,
sort
of stuff.
Well, yeah, basically when I get up in the morning, I can't feel my toes. It takes a while before they kind of come back. And when I saw the neurologist, he said, oh, yes, that's a symptom of Leber's plus. But not that they're doing anything about it.
I think everybody seems to describe, like, our nerves send different signals.
Yes.
Right? Yes. Like they're sending pain or they're sending different signals.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You're right. Well, and this is the only place I have to talk about it. I don't talk about it with my family. I mean, I don't want to complain to them. You know, they don't want to hear
it,
and I don't want to complain with them all the time. This is the only place I can sound out.
Yes, I know.
I'm sorry, everybody.
No, you're right on, Chris. It's so hard because you don't want to sound like a whining person all the time, always complaining. Oh, another ache or pain or symptom.
Exactly. So I apologize.
And they don't
whine.
Understand anyway. No.
So I appreciate the support group.
Yes, it's wonderful.
I think it's been really helpful tonight because I think even to hear everybody's stories and to hear how, you know, I think a lot of us have similar things that we face. And, I mean, there's definitely differences in each of them. But, you know, I think there's a lot of people that are running into headaches and the vision and the temperatures and all of those other things. And you know, even just knowing about it, then I can learn what things would be good things for posting. And I think this would be, if people think it would be helpful, I think this might be a good thing to start to do on a regular basis.
Well, Lisa, is that you that's talking? Y'all were talking about the headaches. This is Joe. I'm still Lynn. Because I've been having headaches the last 3 days, and I've just had a excruciating headache, and I've been taking my medicine, and it's not kicking it, and nothing is helping it. And my husband's like, what do you want me to do? And y'all talking about Botox, and I've never heard of that. And that's something new. I mean,
I think working really closely with a neurologist is really important when you've got headaches that aren't going away.
Yeah, I have been working close with a neurologist, but she has not said anything to me about no Botox.
No, I've never heard of it either. I'm a neurologist.
I mean, never. My neurologist has not even mentioned it to me.
I don't think all of them do it. Like, it might be one of those things where you might just need to ask a question and have a conversation.
This is Marcy again. I've tried like 4 different types of migraine medicines, and there's 3 classes of medicines they try for headache prevention. They try the anti-seizures, the antidepressants, and also beta blockers. Mm-hmm. And I've tried medicines in each 3 of those categories also for headache prevention. Yeah, so I think that's what they do next. And I think insurance only approves the Botox after you've gone through all that. Because, like, I've tried the Topamax, but that one really made me spacey. Right now I'm on the Cymbalta as pain prevention, and that N-tizanidine, the muscle relaxer. And that helps a lot, but I still get headaches. The most recent migraine medicine she put me on is called Trexamet.
That's what I'm on right now.
Yeah, so that's, like I said, that's like my 4th one.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's what they have you go through all those steps before they'll bring up the Botox.
Yeah.
And like I said, it was a specific headache doctor because I'm like, what do I need another neurologist for? I already have a neuro-ophthalmologist, MS neurologist, and you're sending me to another one? Yeah.
But I keep really bad headaches, and when y'all were talking about the Botox, mm-hmm. I was like, and my muscles just tense up so bad. And,
yeah.
And I was just
do
like.
Do you take muscle relaxers?
No, I don't.
Because I do take tazanidine, too, every night, and my headache, like I said, that and the Cymbalta help, but, so that might be something to mention also.
I do not take, my muscles and stuff jump, and I do, like she was talking about a while ago, her neuropathy, and I have that, but they had put me on a Lyrica, and I gained so much weight on it, I was like, this is not even worth it. So I had got off of it because I was still having the pain plus gaining the weight, and I didn't see no help in the medicine. So I was like, if I'm not seeing help in it, they're just increasing it, and I'm gaining like more and more weight with it, and I just I didn't see no just of keeping on taking it. So
no, and I don't know about anyone else. I'm a bit anti-drugs because doctors are very fast about writing out a prescription, and I kind of worry about all the side effects, so I would prefer to be not on any drugs, but try and do things more naturally.
Well, my neurologist, she told me not to take anything that had any statin.
Yes.
Like anything with statin in it.
That's right.
I don't know what that means. But
she said a statin drug is something that you would take for
it's what?
What is it called?
Statins are for cholesterol.
For cholesterol. If your cholesterol levels are high, they give you that. But it's a dangerous drug, from what I've heard.
She told me to completely stay away from all statin drugs.
There's a list of drugs that Lisa has on the LHON.org site that are medications that you're supposed to stay away from when you have LHON. And I don't know if you've seen that there before or not, but and I can post the link to it afterwards. So that's a list that you might want to just know about. And for myself, I have it printed out, and I just keep it in my purse. So that I know, like, when I go to a doctor's appointment, I can just show it to the doctor, and they know not to give me that stuff. And then the other one is a couple of the International Mitochondrial Organizations. They have a list for mitochondrial diseases, general mitochondrial diseases, for drugs that they have noted that have had problems in the past. And, so I also have a copy of that list, and it's pretty extensive. And it's, again, it's just good information. It might be excessive for LHON plus. I really don't know, but at least it then tells you all of the drugs that they know about that cause problems for for mitochondrial disease.
Right, and it's good for people to have to pass on to those who are carriers in your family.
That's right, yeah.
You know, so
that
they're even more aware.
Yeah. Because I think the other thing, too, is you're always worried about those triggers, right? Like whether an antibiotic to a teenager, whether that's the trigger. So
Yes.
I think, you know, there is something to be said about being worried about that. But sometimes you've got to be on it, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well,
I appreciate all of y'all help because y'all have gave me a lot of insight. sorry for my dogs.
Not to worry. Does anything else, anybody have anything else that they'd like to bring up? Or have we sort of, is it probably a good time to wrap it up for tonight and do it again another time?
And Lisa, what I can do is I can do what we sort of promised at the beginning of the call. I'll turn off the recording. And if
okay.
you want, you and I can stay on the call. And anyone that wants to stay on that wanted to talk to you or whatever, but didn't really want to do it on the recorded line, you know, we can just keep the call open for a few minutes for anyone that wants to just keep chatting. But I'll turn off the recording at least for that. Does that sound good?
Sure.
Sounds good to me.
Yep.